welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Thursday morning. We've got all of Wednesday's NBA action from the Orlando bubble at the Walt Disney World Resort. I'm Zach Harper. That's Jared Weiss. That's Brian Smith pushing sound through the internet tubes. Reminder, you can get a one-year subscription to The Athletic 40% off the regular price by going to theathletic.com/dailyding. Get all the best from our team of writers. That's right. It's 40% off. It's like $2.99 a month. You can't afford not to do it. You get access to everything on The Athletic. Plus, you get to use the comment section on the app, even for podcasts, and let us know how we're doing. Coming up on today's show, still zero COVID results for NBA players in the bubble. Ben Simmons has an injury scare, and we've got a new Larry Bird, according to Greg Popovich. But first, Jared, the Lakers have forgotten how to win basketball games. Oh my God, the humanity. Thunder 105, Lakers 86 in Orlando, because they're all in Orlando. The Lakers already clinched the one seed the other night. Right? They clinched the one seed, which I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying they're the Western Conference champions. Not how that works. They might end up being the Western Conference champions, but they're just the one seed right now. So we got to wait a little bit for that. So they don't really have a lot to play for other than just like getting themselves into shape. We had Lil Wayne as a front row virtual fan of this game, as well as kids and teachers from LeBron's I Promise School. So Jared, as the Thunder win a game that matters to them, do these games matter to the Lakers?
Well, they came out of it unscathed, so I guess that's the most valuable part there. But the Lakers, they played all their main guys pretty reduced minutes in this one. I think this game was probably 50% designed to get Kyle Kuzma to find his game and actually like produce at an efficient rate so that he can actually help them win a title. But I mean, you have Dion Waiters as your second leading field goal attempter. I guess that's definitely a red flag that you're not taking this game too seriously. Either, what do you think?
Or that Dion Waiters is taking this game seriously. It's one of the two. It might be both, actually. It might be both.
I mean, he's taking the game. I don't know about seriously, though.
That's true. LeBron played 30 minutes. Anthony Davis played 29 minutes. There is something to be said about, one, making sure these guys are all on the same page, making sure they're in shape, getting their conditioning in. And some people would, you know, hearken to the idea of like, well, in the spirit of being competitive, you know, you got to put that out there so the other team has to try and they have to win games, which, you know, is a crock of feces to me. But yeah, but like, I do think they're playing a little bit with fire here by playing LeBron 30 minutes in a game that doesn't really matter other than the conditioning stuff. But on the Thunder side of it, they very much need this game, right? They're still fighting to get up maybe to the 3 seed, but most likely to the 4-5 matchup. And they probably want to avoid teams like Houston. They probably want to try to get the Jazz in some way because I think they would feel pretty confident in that matchup. And they get to work on some things here. Andre Robertson has come back from this injury. He's in the bubble. And his defense on LeBron was actually pretty good tonight. LeBron only had, 19 points on 19 shots. That's not very LeBron-like, although it has been in this bubble. Right, yeah. It has been in this bubble, but that's not very LeBron-like. But Robertson was very good. Thunder didn't shoot all that well, but they got to the free throw line a bunch. Steven Adams was really good. But yeah, for the Thunder side of it, I'm sure they're happy LeBron didn't play an extra 6 or 7 minutes and AD didn't play an extra 6 or 7 minutes, but they actually kind of kicked their ass when those guys were on the floor.
Oh, for sure. And anyone who's read the CBA knows that it's required by the rules that the Rockets and the Jazz play each other in the first round. So I don't think
we don't need
to waste our time talking about seeding anymore. But, you know, the big thing that I took away from this game was that besides the fact that LeBron playing 30 minutes, I don't have a problem with that because remember, it's not like he's trying to maintain condition or I guess avoid injury and not overexert himself from the length of the season. He's just had the rest portion. So he's really just trying to ramp up as quickly as he can right now. So I don't have any issue with that. But my big takeaways here are that Steven Adams has been transformative in the bubble. And it showed that if you can have a center that can somehow move with Anthony Davis and really push around Anthony Davis, I mean, I don't expect Anthony Davis to have blunders like he did tonight every single night, but you could reduce him enough that the Lakers are not, you know, the Lakers are completely dependent on their two elite stars to produce basically 60 points a night for them. And to see that AD is not forcing the issue too much on taking threes and trying to be more efficient with his shot selection. Kind of the only real flaw left in his game at this point, I guess, is that his shot selection can be relatively inefficient. He takes a lot of contested shots. He doesn't prioritize a three over 20 footers as much as he should. And so I think a few of those things were the things that alarm me about the Lakers for the most part. But at least OKC continues to be just one of the most fun teams to watch. A team that kind of morphs on a nightly basis, but obviously at their core still has Adams and Paul as kind of those two tentpoles. And I tweeted earlier today that Chris Paul is completely, you know, the whole conversation about his value is warped by his salary. And I totally agree with that because Chris Paul should be making way more than he's making right now. Chris Paul continues to prove that even if he's not quite as potent as he used to be, he is still one of the most valuable players in the NBA. And I just love watching him in these games where he's going up against one of his peers like LeBron, because the BS just really comes out. The griftiness really comes out.
It really does. I mean, he was phenomenal in this game. It actually shocks me that he had 5 turnovers, because I felt like he played almost a perfect game. He had 21 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 8 of 12 from the field. Just controlled every bit of tempo. Now, maybe LeBron, if it's a playoff game, you know, goes a little harder in this one and takes some of that control away. But Chris Paul was just phenomenal. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander didn't even have that good of a game, at least making shots. Got to the free throw line a little bit, moved the ball. Steven Adams was great. Danilo Gallinari looks healthy. He looks good. I'm not convinced the Thunder's bench is good enough. I still think that they have too many guys who just are so niche and so small in what their strengths are in terms of roles that it's going to be asking a lot to get all those guys to be good on the same page at the same time. But the starters are really good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the starters are really good, and they didn't have Schroeder in this one.
They're almost like the Celtics of the West in that they're really top heavy with their offensive skill. They have, you know, 5 good offensive players in the starting lineup, and then nobody else can create their own shot pretty much after that. I mean, Darius Bazley in some ways can create his own shot. He went over 7 on the game. Abdul Nader has a little bit of creativity. You know, Hamid Diallo, if you get him in the open court, he can fly around, but if he has to dribble more than twice in a row, that's going to be a problem. So, you know, the creative part is going to be a problem, but I mean, they've been a borderline elite team ever since Billy Donovan figured out their rotation early in the year, and they have 3 point guards that can put up 20 every single night.
Yeah, absolutely. And they gave, you know, Anthony Davis some problems, like kind of like only the Raptors had done in the bubble so far. LeBron, 19 points, as I mentioned, on 19 shots, did have 11 rebounds and 4 assists, 0 turnovers. But AD, only 9 points on 3 of 11 shooting, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, no blocks in this one. Deion Waiters, 14 points, 11 of those came in the fourth quarter. Were they important points? Probably not, but they're important to Deion Waiters, and that's what matters. The Lakers, though, they still cannot hit shots. They were 35% from the field in this one, 5 of 37 from three-point range. That's right, 13.5%, 5 of 37. Jared, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's bad.
I mean, I'm not a numbers expert, but 13.5% seems low to me. The irony, or I guess the coincidence, is that the Thunder also only hit 5 threes in this game, but they went 32 for 36 from the line. I think Steven Adams was the only person that even missed a free throw. I know Hamid Diallo, of course, by rule, Hamid Diallo had to miss a free throw.
Yeah, but that's also in the CBA.
But I mean, hey, again, shout out to OKC. They do not leave points on the floor. I mean, they really maximize, you know, whatever they can get out of their offense.
All right, Jared, let's get to the news and the seeding updates. The NBA announced of the 343 players tested recently, 0 players have tested positive again, the 3rd straight time since the results were starting to be announced in the bubble. That is the latest announced results since July 29th. The league said, in the event that a player on the NBA campus returns a confirmed positive test in the future, he'll be isolated until he is cleared for leaving isolation under the rules established by the NBA and the Players Association. So let me ask you this, Jared. Why are we only hearing about the players? What about coaches? What about the testing of everybody else there?
I am so glad that you're saying that. And first off, congrats again to Magic City. Just more great PR coming out of this now that the test Fantastic. Results came back clean. But I don't understand why we are only hearing about the players, because COVID doesn't discriminate against whether you're a high fluent athlete or if you're just a random Joe Schmo. So anybody that gets it, it's going to be a risk for everybody else. So I'm surprised they're not sharing it. But at the same time, I'm not surprised at all that they're not sharing it, considering how coy that they had been in the first place with all of this kind of information.
Yeah, and I think you could say, like, hey, by the way, we had 35 people test positive. None of them are players. They have been isolated. Like, you can do stuff like that, right? Like, it's not like you have to go out and name names of, like, this media member had it and this coach had it. Like, that's not how legal stuff works when it comes to medical, you know, announcements in any way. And so I do find it curious that we applaud the players and the league for 0 positive tests, which we should. That's a good start. but we're missing like 2,000 people that are there in the bubble.
Yeah, and let's remember, this isn't like a merit type thing. This is just a matter of risk mitigation. Right. You know, it's all like, good job, Adam Silver. You single-handedly thwarted all of those risks yourself. It's like, yeah, they're clearly doing a great job managing this situation. And it's, I mean, look at what's happening in baseball. I don't know if there's a daily ding for baseball, but I'm sure right now they're yelling at each other about how the Marlins don't even play baseball anymore. So clearly this has worked out as well as humanly possible.
Really? They got it from milk? From trying to go out and get milk? That's what the Marlins got it from? Never mind. That's a different podcast altogether. Ben Simmons injured his left knee against the Washington Wizards on Wednesday in the Sixers win. We'll get to that later. But he left about halfway through the third quarter, was shown limping to the locker room in the tunnel on camera, but ESPN reported that early indications were of no swelling and no pain after he left the court. He did not return to the game. Ben Simmons, I wouldn't say injury prone, Jared, but also he's like kind of missed time and he gets banged up. It seems like good news. I'm sure they'll do more testing. Seems like good news, but the Sixers have hitched their wagon to a lot of what Ben Simmons does. Now, obviously Joel Embiid is the best player. He's the main guy, but they need Ben Simmons, even if he has flaws, to be out there.
For sure. He may not be injury prone, but he's certainly prone to get injured. And they should really just wheel around a queen size bed everywhere that he goes and just have him stay off his feet. You got to do it. You know, even when you're bringing him in for a substitution, wheel that bed out there. Let him jump out of bed into the court. We got to get this guy wrapped in bubble and just make sure that he is healthy in the playoffs, because if we don't have Ben Simmons healthy in the playoffs, it's going to really take away from the product.
Unless it means more Shake Milton, and then I'm completely in. You mentioned wheeling that bed around. That's not a bad idea. Now, some people would say that's not a great way to stay in shape, but I'll remind you of one grandpa of Charlie from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. That dude was bedridden for years, got up, spry.
Look at me. Up and about. I haven't done this in 20 years.
Pep and his step went and took over that chocolate factory. I think it's a good idea. I think it's very doable.
I do remember the sports science documentary, Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, and they did talk about that being the best treatment for sore ankles, but I'm probably going to defer to the Sixers medical staff on this one.
Agree to disagree. Let's get into the seeding in the Western Conference, because the funny part about the seeding in the Eastern Conference, the Wizards, who continue to lose, have now dropped behind the Charlotte Hornets, who are not in the bubble. They were not invited to the bubble. That's right. The Wizards are below the Hornets in the standings. For those of you asking, does that affect the lottery odds? No, it does not. Those were locked in before the bubble. They do not change, no matter how bad the Wizards become in this bubble. But in the West, the Blazers, one back of Memphis. Spurs, two back of Memphis. Pelicans are also two back of the Grizzlies. Suns are 2.5 back. Kings are 3 back. It is getting crowded. And as I said yesterday in the ding, Jared, it is getting constipated in the West.
I can barely digest all the excitement. For one, if the Nets somehow keep losing, I feel like the Hornets are entitled to fly into town and get their play-in tournament if it meets the threshold. As far as the race at the end, Memphis, this free fall is fascinating, because if they somehow manage to fall all the way back to the 10th spot and they don't even get a chance to play for the playoffs, that would be truly tragic. But at the same time, we recognize now clearly that the Blazers are the team that we want to see, at the very least, are probably the team we want to see play the Lakers in the first round. They could be pretty competitive. I guess there's a chance that the Pelicans and the Spurs could be competitive, but I think the Blazers give it the best shot. So I think if we're looking at this from a playoff perspective, it looks like it's going the way that it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, the Denver Nuggets also have some seeding news. They moved to a half game behind the Clippers for the 2 seed. Jared, you may be asking yourself, well, how did the Nuggets do that? I'm so glad I made you ask that in my head. Nuggets, 132. Spurs, 126.
My gosh.
No defense at all in this game. No defense required. Michael Porter Jr. was a monster. Derek White was a lot of fun. Keldon Johnson and the Spurs bench were incredible. They scored 70 combined points with 24 from Rudy Gay, 20 from Keldon Johnson. This was a fun one, Jared. And, you know, I don't usually put the Spurs over the last couple of years since Kawhi Leonard in the fun category, but they've been a lot of competitive and they've been a lot of entertaining during this bubble restart.
Well, they're kind of an NBA junkie's dream in that they have all these kind of almost no-name guys, or at least were kind of no-name guys pretty recently, not only are they contributing, but they're playing terrifically. I mean, Derek White has kind of out of nowhere, it seems, become a major three-point pull-up threat, which was really not a part of his game, even like earlier in this season. Keldon Johnson, maybe the sixth man of the bubble right now as a rookie. There's just so many guys that clearly outperform their, I guess, class in the NBA on the Spurs. That's always entertaining.
The class of the Nuggets, though, was too much for them today. No Jamal Murray, no Gary Harris, no Will Barton, but Michael Porter Jr. played, and he played extremely well. He was just unstoppable for them. 30 points, 15 rebounds. Nikola Jokic had a big game of 25 points, 11 assists. I believe he had 4 rebounds as well. And afterwards, Greg Popovich said that Nikola Jokic is the reincarnation of Larry Bird. Did Larry Bird die? Does Pop know something we don't know?
I mean, if you were on Twitter a couple days ago, remember there was that tomato that looked like Larry Bird. So it's very possible Larry Bird has gone through multiple reincarnations over the past week.
It's possible. I don't know what reincarnation means. I thought you had to die to be reincarnated into something else, but apparently it's living in a tomato. It's living in Nikola Jokic, whose arms often resemble a tomato. They get so red as he's running down the court. I don't know that we expect a lot out of the Spurs team. They haven't defended all year. They don't have much size. Like, Jakob Poeltl's in there. They don't have really anyone who can bang with Jokic, and Jokic just did whatever he wanted.
Yeah, and this was one of those games where Jokic is like doing his most athletic moves, which involve at least one of his feet kind of leaving the ground. And it was just so much fun to watch. A lot of those kind of little like pop shots where it looks like he's not even trying on them. Just great fluid, you know, dribble, handoff, rolls kind of stuff. Really a lot of the classic Jokic stuff. And Michael Porter, who, you know, he's this like super talented off the bounce creating score, but he's just really playing as an off ball cutter on a lot of these plays. And Jokic is just drawing so much attention that Porter can fly in there. And so many of these points he's getting are like coming off of those 4 offensive rebounds that he had.
Spurs were just swarming Jokic at times, and he didn't really even have to try. Like, he could just dump off to anybody that was cutting, and Porter was really beneficial from a lot of that action, a lot of that attention. Do you think, I don't want to get too NBA Twittery here, but do you think Porter will actually be a factor for them in the playoffs? Or if, assuming they get Jamal Murray and Will Barton and Gary Harris back, will Porter kind of be pushed aside once again just because he's so young?
That's a really good question. I don't know if he's going to be taken out of the starting lineup. I could envision some matchups where they want to actually bring Millsap off of the bench potentially, although obviously Barton can cleanly fit coming off of the bench because he's got that kind of experience. But I mean, the way that Porter's playing right now, you can't possibly reduce him to a bench role just for the sheer fact that you need him out there for 35 to 40-ish minutes a night, and you're just not going to be able to get him the minutes that you need to get him if he's coming off the bench.
And because he's such a young guy, look, sometimes that can benefit guys of just like, hey, just go in there and shoot, right? Just go in there and you can make your mark that way, and we'll see if you're hot early. But some guys also might just be rhythm players, right? And they need to build that. And if you're playing around with Porter Jr.'s minutes, I don't know that we know enough about him. He's obviously a very gifted scorer, but I don't know if we know enough about him about what that's going to take for him to be maximized in that role.
And it's kind of like what I was saying before. Porter is doing a great job of just kind of timing his cuts, putting himself in position to make plays. And so I think having more minutes out there, it allows him to not press and not make him feel like he has to force his way in there. And he can really just take what opportunities come to him.
As for the Spurs, big bench minutes for Keldon Johnson, for Patty Mills, for Rudy Gay, for someone named Drew Eubanks, which I'm pretty sure isn't a real person. But DeJounte Murray was bad. Lonnie Walker IV was bad. DeMar DeRozan was kind of reduced to more of a facilitator role than a scorer in this one. They've hung on, right? They've put themselves more in the mix than we thought they would be. But the Spurs really blew a chance to gain another game on the Grizzlies. Now, they did it by losing to a much better team, but it was close enough down the stretch. I do think the Spurs are kicking themselves a little bit.
They bust. And I mean, hey, DeMar DeRozan, he took at least 2 threes in this game, so that's progress to a degree.
Sure.
And by the way, shout out to Eubanks. I called up Devin Eubanks the other day on the show, and that was not accurate, but I feel like
I almost totally wrote down Devin Eubanks, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this isn't the Devin Eubanks I remember. And so I looked it up. I was like, huh, Drew, what do you know?
And hey, to his credit, he had a really nice statistical night. He was 12 points and 5 rebounds. That was pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, not bad off the bench.
This is the same thing with the Spurs that we always say. It's that they have so many solid contributors, but the only guy that could really put them over the hump there is DeMar, and DeMar's shot choice is just not efficient enough. And he tends to only really be coming out from a scoring perspective early in the games and late in the games. And so, you know, they just don't have quite the firepower to really go over the top against these better teams.
Jeremy Grant was also fantastic off the bench for Denver. Monty Morris was great in another starting position. What's the weirder stat? 80 combined fourth quarter points for these two teams, 43 for the Nuggets, 37 for the Spurs, or that Jokic only had one defensive rebound the last time that happened. He was against the Spurs in 2017, right?
Yeah, it was the last time that he had just one defensive rebound and more than one offensive rebound. So count on Jokic to be the person that gets more offensive than defensive. But hey, clearly he's got the Spurs matchup figured out. But I can't believe that these teams scored that much in the fourth quarter. And I don't think the Spurs had a single turnover in the fourth quarter.
Well, yeah, when the other team's not playing defense, who needs to turn the ball over? You just have to pass to one of your teammates. It's that easy. Jazz 124, Grizzlies 115. The Grizzlies went into this winless in the bubble, and they had already lost Jaren Jackson Jr. with a torn meniscus. The hits keep coming for them as they lose another one. And like we mentioned earlier, their chances of getting into the play-in tournament are looking rough. Like, they're about to lose position to the Blazers. They might lose it to the Pelicans. They might lose it to the Spurs. I don't think we have to worry about the Kings at this point, but the Suns are charging. Look, I don't think if the Grizzlies end up missing out on the playoffs or even the play-in tournament, it's devastating. We never thought they would be this good this season. But Jared, they got to get something here.
They have to, I guess, at the end of the day, maybe find a way to make their offense really flow naturally around Ja Morant. We're seeing right now it's just a lot of Ja just forcing his way in. A lot of young Russell Westbrook type stuff. And their offense just does not have much consistency to it, especially losing Triple J, where, like, at least Triple J, he was a sniper out on the elbows that you could count on to attack closeouts and throw it down. So right now they're missing too much offensive firepower. And I think that they should use these last few games to maybe work on the system and figure out, you know, what guys are going to be ready to take the leap as in bigger roles next season. But do you think that they still have a chance at actually winning something here in the playoffs?
No, I don't. Look, their schedule the rest of the way is brutal, right? Like, the only thing that can save them is that the teams in the final two games, which might be Boston and Milwaukee, I'm not sure the order of that, but is that they won't be playing for anything, right? Like, that's really the only thing that's going to save this Grizzlies team at this point. And I do wonder if it's time just to see what it looks like if Ja Morant just tries to become a scorer all the time. Like, I do think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive in establishing himself instead of being just the good point guard that he is, trying to find everybody.
And by the way, that Boston game is going to be interesting because that game could decide whether the fact that the Celtics own the Grizzlies pick, whether that pick is going to fall from 17 down to 14. So there's a lot at stake for the future there.
Okay, so Boston will probably be really trying to win that game no matter what.
I think Danny Ainge will be trying to get them to win the game. I don't think the players
are going to give a crap. Guys, we have to blow them out tonight. Don't leave this one up for any kind of confusion. On the Jazz end of it, they went into this game the second worst three-point shooting team in the bubble. Again, it's just three games, but they were shooting like 27%. They went off in this one. They were 18 of 45. That's 40% from the three-point range. They had a 22-1 run to take control of the game, and this was all because Joe Ingles was fantastic. Like, Joe was absolutely amazing. They've been waiting for him to shoot the ball like this. He had 25 points. He hit 6 threes. He had a big, big play coming out of a timeout with 3:30 left.
Yeah, you know, Quinn Snyder made a mistake not keeping Joe Ingles in the starting lineup earlier this year, where they were trying to find some offensive defense balance, because Joe Ingles has to be on the floor because he's so brilliant and they can do so much great stuff off of him. And the play that I loved in this game, and Quinn Snyder is one of the best at drawing ATO plays, he drew this play where Donovan Mitchell curls up to get a catch and shoot opportunity at the near elbow near the sideline. The Grizzlies freak out and they triple team. And he just pops the ball kind of right over that triple team to Joe Ingles, who's just standing right next to him, completely empty, nobody near him. He buries a three. They do all sorts of cheeky stuff when he's in the game. And, you know, whether he's jumping into the Grizzlies huddle, which he actually did in this game, or he's just completely messing with their defense. I mean, Joe can just toy with everybody, and I love watching him play.
Yeah, he scored, as my Aussie nieces would say, he scored heaps today with the 25 points. Heaps. Shout out to Lee Ellis, by the way. The Jazz also, I mean, probably their most complete starting lineup performance of the bubble restart. Everyone was really good in this. Conley got a revenge game. You look at Jonas Valanciunas and he had 21 points, 14 rebounds, right? You think that's a good game. Gobert dominated him in this game. Like, he dominated everybody in this game. He finished with 21 points, 16 rebounds, got to the free throw line 12 times, hit 11 of them. He had three blocks. I thought Gobert completely outplayed him, and that's crazy to think when you look at the box score, but that's just how the game felt.
You're so right. I mean, that hard pick and roll, you just have Gobert flying down the middle of the lane and just throwing it down over everybody. That's when Denver's most dangerous, right, is when they're going downhill because they can kick out to some great shooters, or you have probably the best pick and roll finisher in the game right there to just do whatever he wants right near the rim. So the fact that he got to the line 12 times is huge, because the big thing that Rudy Gobert really wants to do is get the opponent's bigs into foul trouble. And then they can have a really, really massive advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Conley, 23 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds against his former team. Ja Morant did have 20 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds. He was good. It's just they need him to do more. Grayson Allen had 20 points off the bench. Jared, I would say that the Grizzlies are probably going to ask the Jazz to keep the same energy, right? Because they play the Spurs on Friday. The Spurs are closing in on the Grizzlies. They need the Jazz to not become the Jazz against the Thunder and the Lakers. They need them to be the Jazz that were against the Pelicans and the Grizzlies.
Oh, it'll be fun to watch a Spurs team whose center is a complete afterthought against a Utah team who completely depends on their center.
Other games from the bubble, Sixers took down the Wizards 107-99 as Joel Embiid's 30-11 kept the Washington Wizards winless in the bubble. As we mentioned earlier, Ben Simmons left this game with a knee injury. Raptors beat the Magic 109-99 behind 10 assists each from Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. Aaron Gordon did leave the game after 20 minutes with a hamstring injury. And the Celtics pummeled the Nets 149-115 behind 7 Celtics players in double figures, led by Jaylen Brown with 21. Okay, big games coming up on Thursday. A lot of good action Thursday night. Lakers will take on the Rockets for the late national TV game. We have Clippers Mavericks as a potential first round matchup preview. Blazers try to get even closer to the Grizzlies for that 8th seed as they take on the Denver Nuggets, who will be on a back-to-back. And the Heat and Bucks will go at it. The Pelicans will bring Zion against the Kings. And TJ Warren looks for revenge as he leads the Pacers against his former Suns team. That's going to do it for today's show. Don't forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We've got the Athletic NBA show on Thursday, Point of Contention. It's a fun one with me hosting, Ethan Strauss and Marcus Thompson debating. Also, don't forget Nerdish, She Wrote on Friday. No Dunks doing all their phenomenal podcasting. Make sure you check that out. Check it out on YouTube. We also have Tampering. We have House of Strauss. We have the team-specific blog and the team-specific shows. And of course, you can comment on any single section you want. Again, theathletic.com/dailyding. Comment on a podcast, comment on an article, comment on power rankings, whatever you want to do. Just go to theathletic.com/dailyding. You're going to get 40% off that annual subscription. Thanks for waking up with us. Wear a mask, stay inside, stay away from each other. Please be healthy. And Jared, hit me with that sign off.
Jingles.